So today is the 8th of July. So we're doing the NFNLP forum. I'm trying to keep this going. So today we're going to talk about some more clinical issues. But as always, you know, my contact info, NFNLP is the main one. I'm working on drwillhorton.com as we're talking about it. That'll be up in the next few days, where a whole bunch of stuff will be. I have two basic websites, drwillhorton.com and NFNLP. NFNLP is the organizational side, and Dr. Will Horton will have my addiction stuff, my books, my coaching, and that. So that's the current plan. But follow me on Twitter, Dr. Will at RealNLP, Instagram. I try to post a lot there. Of course, Facebook, and I have my addiction site and a few other things. So anyway, so today we're going to talk about some clinical things, because I was getting some questions about clinical syndromes, right? So, and I know, you know, in our world of hypnosis and NLP, unless you're a licensed professional, you're not supposed to use the clinical terms. You know, the National Guild of Hypnotists talks about it, so does IAC, some of the other things. But there's such a blend when it comes to some of this, it's kind of hard to not use some of these terms. They're not, you know, I know I was reading a thing in this, one of the psych things, Florida psych thing, and they were talking about, you know, they try to protect certain words or use it as a clinical diagnosis, but it's in the lexicon. It's a common word. You can't not use this stuff. Right. So let's start with, I'm going to talk about something, like a few things, and we'll just have some fun with it. Number one is anxiety, right? Why do people come to hypnotists? I'm going to give the top few reasons, right? Number one is anxiety, and they have the GAD thing, which is generalized anxiety disorder, right? And just like it says there, this is from the DSM-5. It's uncontrolled feelings of anxiety without a single definitive trigger or source. So it's generalized anxiety if you just feel anxious and you can't say why. If there's a trigger or source, then it's a specific kind of anxiety. If if your company might be going bankrupt, that's a different kind, obviously. And that's a specific one. But most people have it spills over, right? It might be sparked by a traumatic situation, but it seems sometimes to have no specific source at all. It just kind of springs to life. Suddenly you start feeling anxious, right? And it take it to the extreme, an anxiety attack totally mimics a heart attack, right? To the point where the EMTs will show up, they'll usually take you to the hospital, right? Even if they suspect it's an anxiety attack. Why? Well, if it happens to be a heart attack, it wouldn't, you know, do well for the ambulance company or the fire department if they didn't take you. You know, it can coexist with other things, but it's racing heart, can't sleep, can't rest, right? Difficulty concentrating, these are the big markers for it. So if you wanted to use a clinical diagnosis, you had to have a few of these markers. You can't let go of things. Your mind essentially gets stuck in worry mode. You can't seem to divert yourself into other ways of thinking and feeling. You know, physical sensations are not unheard of in generalized anxiety, but they're usually things like headaches, stomach aches, you know, gastrointestinal, the runs, you know, where you can't keep food down, you know. Stomach aches, can't breathe, your throat closes, chest pains. This is where you think you're having a heart attack because you can't breathe. And again, the biggest thing of a heart attack is your chest feels heavy and you can't breathe, and maybe your arms hurt. Well, you know, if you have anxiety disorder and you can't breathe and your chest hurts, you know, then you can basically think yourself into it, right? You know, and bowel dysfunctions where you either get constipated or the runs, either way, right? It's a diagnosable disorder that's usually you have an evaluation, right? But how many people have this where it's just generalized anxiety, right? And then the next one we kind of get, and it's real common in the lexicon of the general population, which is bipolar disorder. Everybody's diagnosing each other with bipolar. He's bipolar, she's bipolar, everybody's bipolar, you know, because it shifts in mood, right? Like you get high energy, euphoria, overactive, feel invincible, right? That's one thing, but everybody forgets it also can be very irritable, agitated in this manic state where you're so up, if anybody challenges you, you explode, right? And it's usually associated with high risk taking, right? Increased pulsivity. That's why they go on, people go on shopping sprees, people go on, you know, sex sprees, whatever it happens to be. They're up and they can't get enough and they keep going, right? And on the other end of the spectrum, which is called bipolar, after you get this, usually you go into a low mood, you know, the depressive side of the syndrome. But it mimics major depression. They feel down on themselves, low energy, motivation. And that's when there's a high incident of suicide, especially if you just, someone that's bipolar comes off a manic episode, let's say they spent too much money or, you know, they went out, you know, had a lot of sex or went on gambling spree, whatever. And now they're crashing and they're coming down. Plus they're seeing the ramifications or the repercussions of what happened in the manic episode. Right. So that, and again, it's overused because there are people confused. Someone was trying to say that, like, they thought someone was bipolar and they start describing it. Well, sometimes they have a lot of energy and other times they don't. I mean, isn't that people's, you know, sometimes you feel great. You feel like kicking ass and taking names. Other times, not so much. Right. So you really have to think. And again, this is overused in the lexicon. You need to imagine it. It is like manic is manic. You can't stop. You can't take a nap. You might not sleep for days. I really saw this clinically when I worked for the prison. When I was a clinical director for the Florida State Prison, there'd be a guy in a manic episode, and he literally wouldn't sleep for days at a time. He's in a jail cell. He's not going anywhere. And because he was in the psych unit, we didn't even want to let him out to do anything because he was just like, and he didn't stop talking, da, 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 da. We had a few of the cells set way off by themselves that we'd have to move these people to because they wouldn't shut up. You know, the TV's off, everything's off. There's, you know, contrary to what some people believe, prison is not an easy life, right? So there's no radios, there's no nothing in these cells. And you know, when lights are out, buddy, the lights are out, but this, they won't shut up. Just did it. They'd be and walking, banging, doing exercises, right? But your other inmates that are in the psych unit for other things, they need to get some sleep. This guy. So I'd see these people do this for days at a time. And then one day I remember coming in, one guy in particular, I get there and it's quiet. I'm like, this is strange. When I got down to that end, and he was asleep. He literally, other than to get up and eat a tiny bit, he didn't get up for hours of days, like 3 days, right? And then he was depressed mood. Then he got back on his meds and he was fine for a while, right? But what you see, people with true bipolar, they usually stop taking the meds because it knocks off, it keeps you from being super depressed, keeps you from being super high, but basically you got almost no emotion. So the people would quit taking the meds. And, you know, everybody forgets in prison, you can refuse medication. So that's bipolar, right? And what about depression? The DSM-5 identifies several symptoms, you know? Two main criteria are depressed mood and anhedonia. I always pronounce it. Anhedonia. I still pronounce that wrong most of the time. But it has to do with sadness, negative emotions, feeling down. Anhedonia means you don't feel pleasure or interest in things you once enjoyed. You used to love working out or going fishing or whatever. Now you don't even want to do that, right? You're totally shut down. That's anhedonia, right? And you must have one or other of these two main criteria to be depressed, to be diagnosed as depressed. Right? But again, when you think about that, again, everybody gets down, right? Are you depressed? Do you have the blues? Are you just down? Is it specifically driven by a certain outside event? This is one of the reasons I think people get misdiagnosed with depression. You know, you're going through a divorce, and especially if it's, you didn't want it, your spouse just says it or something, and you're down. Well, shit, you probably should be down. Somebody died, you know, your significant other, or, you know, your parents, somebody died, you're down. It's going to be normal, right? So that's a depressed mood. And then it also leads to anhedonia, because things that you used to find pleasurable, you just don't get any pleasure. Even when you're down a little bit, you don't find pleasure in the things you used to find pleasurable, right? So again, when people show up in your clinics as hypnotists, NLPers, and personal coaches, if they say they're depressed, right, you do some information gathering to find out, is it specific, what's going on in their life that may cause it, like a relationship issue, you know, a health issue of them or someone close to them, yada, 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 you know. And sometimes we have people showing up because when you're going through a major life transition, like retirement or job change or relationship change, something, sometimes you get a little bit of anhedonia. The things you used to find pleasurable, you don't find pleasurable anymore, right? And so you have to go find new things that are pleasurable, right? Again, I used to see this a lot in the addiction world, because everything was tied to the alcohol, the drugs, or the, whatever the addiction was. Well, that's gone. Now you got to kind of reset your, you know, your stabilizers to figure out where you're going. So that's depression. PTSD, right? Post-traumatic stress disorder. You have to be exposed to a stressful or a traumatic event, right? The DSM has established a criteria that shows that what counts as a traumatic event. But again, this is in the eye of the beholder. There's been people been through horrible events that wouldn't call them all that traumatic. And there are people that just witness it secondhand that can go through it, right? The person, you know, has to be exposed to death of themselves or someone close to them or something like that, right? Doesn't have to mean they were near death. It just means there's threat of death or injury, right, that could lead to it, right? This could lead to, like, and it could be sexual violence, car wrecks. You know, usually when you talk about PTSD, a lot of people default to, like, combat veterans, but there's all kinds of other things. And now they're actually opening up some of the dialogue, because what about emotional abuse? Or if you've been emotionally abused, right? You can get the same kind of syndromes, right? Because what are some of the symptoms, right? You have to have one symptom to be diagnosed. Could be nightmares, flashback, involuntary memories, you know? You know, the memories just keep coming back, right? They just keep going, right? Emotional distress after being reminded of the trauma. You see something that reminds you of it, right? A physical reaction after being reminded of it. You might go into an anxiety attack. You might go into physical depression. So you have these kind of symptoms, right? And you can get increased aggression or irritability, right? A big one, usually everybody links it with the combat veterans, is hypervigilance, almost to the point of paranoia. But I've seen it with people that have survived a car wreck. They become hypervigilant when they're in the car. They even just as in the passenger side, right? A lot of times it leads to increased in risky behavior, you know, drinking, drugs, sex, gambling, things you wouldn't normally do, right? Because it has to do with, in the back of your mind, you think you're going to die anyway, you might as well do something, right? You can't sleep, you have increased startle response, something that normally wouldn't makes you startle, right? And a hard time concentrating. So those are like the big ones that we get. We get anxiety, we get people thinking they're bipolar, and we get post-traumatic stress, right? Depression, things like that, all right? But do some of these sound familiar, especially in, let's say, since February, March, right? And for most clinical diagnoses, the symptoms have to last for at least a month. Well, this has been going on since, depending on what part of the country you're in, the lockdown and everything going on, at least a month, right? Are we exposed to death, or at least the fear of death? You know, if you watch the news, yes, right? By you or a loved one, right? And does it cause an impact or impairment or distress in your normal life, such as social or work? Well, shit, a lot of us, they took away your social life. They took away a lot of people, their work life, right? So how many people right now could be diagnosed with all of the above, general anxiety disorder or almost like bipolar, or depression or post-traumatic stress, right? But a lot of these labels, and even a lot of the psychologists don't like them, or psychiatrists, right? They were put together just to get reimbursement, right? Because if you don't have a clinical diagnosis and you're going to do therapy as a psychiatrist, a social worker, psychologist, you know, a mental health counselor, you need a diagnosis, right? So you can get reimbursement. But then sometimes people take those labels that we place on them and they wear it like a badge of honor, right? And again, the symptoms overlap, right? And it's why you can, if you truly have these things, if you go to three different doctors, you may get three different diagnoses. Also too, they may slide a little bit. So, you know, you show up for a clinical evaluation and you're in anxiety, they're gonna diagnose one thing. You go on the next day, you might be depressed. So you get diagnosed as depressed, right? And you won't even mention that you were anxious the day before or hypervigilant. So it's like all of these things, these symptoms overlap. But there's more and more talk in the especially the holistic psychiatric world, that stress is the primary driver of all this, right? And the neurochemicals that drive stress. Right, cortisol, the all these things, you know, can, you know, from your generalized anxiety disorder, because it makes you, has to do with your neurochemicals going, which can give you the physical symptoms. Same with your bipolar, you know, your depression, all of these things, post-traumatic stress, you know, stress is the underlying cause, right? So what is hypnosis, NLP, and coaching really, really good for? Helping people relieve their stress, right? So, and again, when you talk, you know, like some of the organizations, the National Guild, IACT, the International Association of Counselors and Therapists, International Medical and Dental Hypnotherapy Association, even I don't talk about that much, but even NFNLP, don't use the clinical diagnosis words, you know, why not just call them what they are? You feel anxious. Right? You feel down, right? And yes, I think you can even use those terms like anxiety or depression because they're in the public lexicon, but you stress that you are not diagnosing it, right? Because we all feel up, we all feel down. We all are experiencing parts of post-traumatic stress. Can you sleep? You're worried about the future. You're on heightened startle response because every day they're telling us something different. Wear a mask. Don't wear a mask. It's airborne. It's not airborne. It's going to do this. It's going to do that. It's like, you know, so it's in which increases your stress level. So like, you know, is it generalizing anxiety disorder or are you stressed out? Is someone really bipolar or parts of their personality kind of out of order? You know, one part might be real energetic, one part might be really down. I mean, there's different ways of looking at all this, right? Are someone in depression? Are they bummed out? And if so, is it specific to a cause, to an external source? You know, their jobs are gone. You know, my friend, Dr. Bramante, Albert, jumped on, you know, I mean, are you depressed? You're an actor? Well, you're a Broadway actor primarily? You know, Broadway or like the road shows, you know, you're an equity actor, it's called. You might be bummed out because it's pretty much shut down. And they don't know when they're going to start it up. Even some of the film and television, they're firing up. Then you hear they're shutting it down. Ah, right? So you could be bummed out, right? Of course, you're going to be depressed or down, right? And are you in post-traumatic stress? It's relentless, right? And it becomes boom, 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 boom. It keeps coming at you. So, you know, are you really in post-traumatic stress disorder? Or are you just overloaded because there doesn't seem to be a way out of this, right? And so you have ruminating thoughts and all this other stuff. So that's just a little bit about some of the clinical things that people talk about, or I get people asking, how do, you know, can we treat it? You know, like anxiety or bipolar or depression or post-traumatic. We don't diagnose. If they come with you, the thing I'm stressing, if someone comes to you and they've been diagnosed by a psychologist or a psychiatrist, in some states, a social worker can diagnose. Not all. I usually, in my office, I usually start the conversation about, you know, it's like labels. You know, is the label useful? That's really, I always talk about, is it useful or not, right? Because sometimes you'll take that label and do something else with it, right? Last week, we had, I'm going to stop the share. Last week, we had Dr. Wes Rocky, a holistic medical doctor, talk. And he talked about improv, you know, the improv, improvisational theater. Well, now there's a whole version of improvisational therapy or improvisational medical interventions. And a lot of it, not to bore you with it, but in improv, the number one rule is you never say no. You always say yes, and you take it to the next level. To tie it into what Dr. Rocky was saying last week, when you look at some of these labels of anxiety or depression or bipolar or post-traumatic, and someone says that, you can go, yes, and this means what? Yes, and, you know, I have depression. I've been diagnosed with depression. Yes, and there are millions of people that have overcome this and lived a normal life. It's a reframe by saying yes, and first you're just acknowledging whatever they said, and you're adding to it or taking it in another direction, right? Which we call it reframing. It's a therapeutic intervention using improvisational, and you ask them to say, what else could it mean to you, right? Because in improvisation, you build on it, you take it in different directions, right? And yes, and millions of people have overcome anxiety, and what else could this mean for you? And you're constantly adding the yes and building on it and taking it to the next level. So that's, I'm going to stop the recording, and then we'll just have some discussion.